Paragraph, what do we got? Questions, comments? Yeah, Frank.
What is Ziv and what's Bul?
The month. Okay, so first, an interesting thing. What do we see? In the Torah, the months of the year are just what? Numbers.
Yeah.
Right? The first month, the second month. The months that we use are what? Nisan, Iyar. Where do they come from? Do you know?
Oh, Romans?
The stars.
Persians. Right? When we came back from Galus, the Ramban talks about it, that we kept the months that we used in Galus as a reminder of where we're coming from. Right? I always use this as like when someone will say to me, "Ah, you still go by Kenny? Why do you go by Kenny? Don't you have a Hebrew name?" I said, "It's a Farish Ramban." That's what I always tell them. And really, I go by Kenny because I look in the mirror, I see Kenny. I grew up as Kenny. I was always Kenny. My parents were like, "Kenny, I'm Kenny." But I tell people this just to make them feel bad. I go, "It's a Farish Ramban, don't you know?" And they all walk away like as if, "Oh, I should have known." But they have no idea what I'm talking about. But this is the Ramban. The Ramban that says, you should remember where you came from. Right? And therefore, we have these months. But what we see over here is there were some other months. There were names of other months. There's a few places we have it. I don't know where the influence comes from. Like, what it, you know, I'm sure, I didn't look it up, but I'm sure I bet in the dot maker it would say, you know, where it, you know, where this name comes from.
How is it easier, though?
But it's, the idea is Ziva le'ilana. Probably Hebrew. Ziva le'ilana is that it's when the trees are starting to sprout. You know, Zohar prachim v'anitzanim. That's what the Mefarshim say. So it's the second month. We call it Iyar, but it's the second month. Why did they choose that time? You tell me. Why did they choose that time to start building?
So it's blossoming. So
good. It's also it's a nice season. It's the end of the rainy season. Right. It's a good time. It's sort of like we had earlier, the time the kings went out to war. You go in the springtime. Right? Now's a good time. You want to get a project started, and it's start in the middle of winter. Right? Or the boiling summer.
It's like when you're making a pool.
And you're making what?
A pool. Like you can really start construction like after
the winter. Alright, so you wait till it's nicer weather. So this is the way it started. But that's ER, the second month. Yes. And it's important thing to keep in mind. People mess up all the time. We count from Nisan. Even if our year, right, Tash and Ayin Tet, starts in Tishrei. Tishrei is the seventh month of the year.
So this is my focus about how the song goes.
Which song?
Kindergarten, we learn.
Oh, how do you learn it?
Learn
Nisan first. And some people start Tishrei?
Yeah.
Because I asked in my shiur once, we do our game show, and I said, you know, which month of the year is Adar? And they all got it wrong, because they all counted from Tishrei. And I said, no, we don't count from Tishrei. It's the 12th month. I mean, like I said, you know, we even say it in we have sukkim that say it. So, but that's here. What else? Questions, comments? Yeah.
Why did it take him 4 years to start?
Oh, that's a very good question. Why did it take him 4 years to start? What do you think? Why did he wait 4 years?
Maybe to like, to, because someone was giving like, getting a lot of alliances. So he wanted to 100% be like a...
Okay, so you want to say that's good. We know that over the course of his career, he goes 40 straight years with peace. But that's, you know, that's Monday morning quarterback. In the beginning, he has to make sure, he has to know that he's going to have the peace and serenity, which David didn't have, and he was still forming alliances. That's very nice. I didn't think of that. I don't think anyone says that. It's very, very nice. Okay, I saw two ideas. The question, the reason why it's even a better question than you think it is, we already know so many times we saw Pesukim and Shmuel that David already collected all the necessary money and material, gold, silver. Everything was right there. It's not like Shlomo had to raise money for this. Oh, let's have a building campaign. You know, well, let's, you know, like he didn't have to do that.
He want the best materials anyway.
And David already brought it all.
Who knows, David got the best ones. He wanted to do one from the other guy, you know?
Okay. I'm just saying, it seems as if everything was ready in Divrei Yamin. Turn to Divrei Yamin. Chaf, Divrei Yamin Aleph. Perachachet, Pasuk Yir Aleph. Page 1936. All right, so what do I have? Let's see. What does it say?
Pasuk?
Pasuk Yir Aleph. What does it say?
Abdu then gave to his son Shlomo the plans for the hall and its structures, storage rooms and upper chambers and inner rooms, and for the chamber of the ark cover.
So not only did he have all of the money which we saw, and gold and silver, but the plans. You might have said, oh, well, I needed time to draw up the architectural plans.
He had the blueprints.
Everything was ready. Why do you wait 4 years? Okay, so Ronnie gives one good answer. An answer that I saw that was very, very nice. I think it's the Abba Rabinel, but I don't remember it now. He wanted to use his own money, and he needed time to accumulate it. Why would Shlomo not want to use David's money?
They also bring stuff in
time,
like
time war. Go turn to Perek Zion Pasuk Nun Aleph.
Because he had enough.
Zion Pasuk Nun Aleph.
Zion.
51. Page 821. Read it. Brown, read it.
When all the work that King Shlomo had done for the temple of Hashem was completed, Shlomo brought that which his father David had sanctified, the silver, the gold, and the articles, and placed them in the treasuries of the temple of Hashem.
He had all that stuff. He didn't use any of it. He put it in the treasury. So now the question is, why didn't he use all the stuff his father dedicated? We say, Mizmashiach and Advice of David. David dedicated. Everything's there. Why didn't he use David's money? So I'm pretty sure this will be Rabbi Nell. Yeah, what do you want to say?
Guys, you're going to use that stuff in the future.
Why put off the future what you have now?
Yeah.
So, idea that I saw, let me see if I have it written down, who? Rashi says. Rashi says, because of the base of Mikdash would be destroyed. There will be a Chil Hashem. What will be the Chil Hashem? Goyim will say, of course your base of Mikdash is destroyed. Our gods got even with you because David came and conquered our lands and pillaged and took all the spoils of war, and now you took all of our money and gold and silver and bronze and you built a temple, and our God said, that's it, I'm getting back at you and I'm going to destroy what you built from our resources. Okay? And therefore, since you pillaged our temples, your temple was destroyed. That is one idea. Second idea, okay, I saw that. Aaron, you don't like it so much?
Yeah,
you don't like it either? A friend, you don't like that? I thought it was interesting. Here's another idea. Tell me if you like this one. Second idea is, Shlomo felt, I find this one to be really interesting. Shlomo felt that David made a huge mistake keeping that money there during the 3 years of famine. When there was the 3 years of famine, at the end of Sefer Shmuel, why didn't David go into the safe, take out the money, and save lives? You're so worried about building the Beit Mikdash. There are people starving here. Dig into the treasury. And therefore, he felt that this money is somewhat tainted.
People say that that's David's sin.
I don't know. This is just brought down as Rashi's idea. Why he didn't use Shlomo didn't use David's money. It's an interesting idea. Like, we didn't see necessarily that people were dropping dead from the famine. But again, Rashi's bothers again, like, what do we deal with? The first one, sometimes they're trying to deal with the question that's hidden. What's the question that's hidden here? Why use your own money? And David has the money, why not use it? So we're looking for possible reasons why the money is tainted. So one is the possible Chil Hashem.
Yeah, but he still used it in the treasuries, which means it's still...
set aside, but it's not building the temple. I don't know. I hear your question. Based on the second interpretation, he's just giving that money out to the people, you know, set up some chesed organization. I don't know.
Make a
good mach. Yeah.
We just want to, like, establish his kingship, like, he's the one to do everything, not David, not, like, his previous...
It could be. You're right. We will see that with his next son sometimes. Like, sometimes the one that's succeeding his famous father wants to try to make his mark. Right? He wants to make his mark. On the other hand, if there's like a chiyuv to build Beit Mikdash, you're delaying it just because you want to make your mark, it's a little bit...
Yeah.
That sounds a little bit wrong, right? Now, the size of the Beit Mikdash is... Okay, another... Oh,
he's
Kabbalistic idea.
He's making his mark for himself and making his mark for other people.
Why?
Like saying like, oh, I have the money to do this. Same thing with the 40,000 horses, you know, stables.
Oh, again, just trying
I have my own money.
Impress upon the guy. I don't even need David's money.
Yeah.
Okay, I have money to spare.
Yeah.
Maybe. There's an interesting mystical idea. When he waited 4 years, it turned out to be 480 years from the building of the Mishkan. Okay? There were 369 years the Mishkan was built. If you do the math, after that, where the Mishkan traveled, by the time the Beit HaMikdash was built, you get to 480 years, which is the exact number, according to Chazal, that the Beit HaMikdash Bayis Rishon stood, and then the 70-year Golus till Bayit Sheni. Because Bayis Rishon is 410, and 70 years of Golus.
Oh,
so there's something about 480 that he wanted to do. And I even saw one person say, when the Bar Kokhba rebellion begins, it's 480 years after building a Bayit Sheni. Right? That it's sometime after Bayit Sheni, 60-some-odd years. Bayit Sheni stood about 420 years. And then 60-some-odd years after that, you have the Bar Kokhba. It's also because he knew there's something about 480. Right? So, again, it's not exact with the Bar Kokhba, but we also don't know how really long the Bayit Sheni stood. But again, using Chazal's idea, it was 420. So then it's somehow mystical, something about the year 480. Okay? Don't know. Now, the Beit HaMikdash, interesting, the measurements. In general, the Beit HaMikdash is twice as big and three times as tall as the Mishkan. Okay? In volume, it's 11 times the size. And I saw one of the first ones, they had a beautiful idea that's why in the Beit HaMikdash there were 11 menorahs, why in the Mishkan is only one. Because the menorah is there to light it up. Now the space is just 11 times bigger. So we have 11 menorahs. Okay? In Bayit Rishon, you had, aside from the one that was standing there, you had five more on each side. So 10 plus 1, 11. And we needed more light because the building was much bigger. The Kodesh Kadashim was 20 by 20. And the Heichal was 20 by 40. I'll show you a picture. Right? Here's 20 by 20. Okay? And here's 20 by 40. And the height, this is 20 high, and this is 30 high. Why? Very interesting thing. Gemara Baba Basra says, using this as the example here, take a look at it. Yeah. Pass this to Aaron. It's like a smaller version, but you can take a look. The Gemara Baba Basra says that when I want to figure out the proper size of a room, so the height of the building should be half the amount of the width plus the length. So now look at your thing. The Heichal is 40 by 20, so that's 60. The height is 30. The Kodesh Kadashim is 20 by 20, that's 40. So half of that is 20. And why does the Gemara get into that? The Gemara gets into that because it starts saying, if I want to sell a room, and I buy a room or I buy a home, if someone made the ceiling too low, I could say, that's not what I paid for. I expected a normal home, and therefore this is not right. Right? You go into a wedding hall, so you expect the ceiling to be much higher than just some other room because it's a much larger room. So there's a certain sort of feeling that you have, depending on how long and wide it is, the height. The Bayit Sheni, see, Bayit Rishon, what we have over here, this picture of, there was an actual wall between the Kodesh and the Kodesh Kadashim. In Bayit Sheni, there was a parochet. There was no wall, which meant the size of the Beit HaMikdash was 60 by 20. Not 40 and then 20, but 60. If so, tell me how high the Beit HaMikdash was.
40.
Bayit Sheni, 40. Very good. 60 plus 20. And that's the height. The Gemara Bava Basra goes through the dimensions we have over here, and from it, it learns halachot, you know, what the house should look like. Now, we also talk over here about, I also have to mention, though, you see this thing, you have this big ulam. It's not clear what the ulam is for, the very, very tall, 120 amma thing. So the Gemara talks about that maybe the lechem upon him, the ingoing and outgoing lechem upon him was stored on a table there before it was brought in, or it was taken out. The Abarabanel is an interesting idea. Talk about this glass, the windows. What did it say about the windows? It's right in the beginning. Where's the windows? Pasuk Dalet. What does it say? Narrowing windows for the temple. Now, in Hebrew, let's say narrowing, it says, V'yaz l'bayit chalonei shkufim atumim. The shakuf means see-through. Atum means you can't see through it. So make up your mind. What is it? So one of the first ones I saw, stained glass. Right? Or one-way mirrors. In other words, it let light in, but people couldn't see in. They don't want people looking in the Beit HaMikdash, but we want the light to come in. So it could be like one-way glass, or it can be stained glass. So light is coming in, but people can't really see in. But there's a famous idea in the Gemara, narrowing windows. Usually, you look at the, you know, old houses that you go to, the windows are like this. They're shaped out. So when the sun is moving from east to west, you have sunlight coming in when it's in the morning, sunlight coming in from in the afternoon. This was the opposite. Why would it be like that? Because the light was going out from the Beit HaMikdash. Right? That's the idea. Trying to say that it wasn't like we need light coming in, it's like the light's going out. This is the idea. Pasuk Zion. Read again, Pasuk Zion. Okay, Ron, just read 7.
When the temple was being built, it was built of complete quarried stone, but the hammers, the chisel, and any iron utensil was not heard in the temple when it was being built.
So, they didn't use iron utensils to chip away the stone. Okay, we spoke about this when we talked about David was sinning. You know, they can't. What's the reason why you can't do it? Why don't we use iron?
Because it shortens people's
lives. Shortens people's lives, and now we're lengthening, you know. So what did they use? What did they use to cut the stone? So the pashup shot is, they did all the chiseling in the quarry, and they brought the stones. It's like prefab, right? You buy that ready to put together a sukkah, and you just put it together. So the stones are all cut somewhere else, cut to size, transported and put there. But the Gemara talks about they used the shamir. What's the shamir? Anyone know? This special animal. Now, even if you don't want to go that way, the shamir was definitely used to carve out. Gemara talks about the names on the choshen of the Kohen Gadol.
So like the
okay?
Unicorn thing that was only
unicorn thing. That wasn't a unicorn thing, but yeah, okay. Yes, it's a type
turtle.
It's a turtle. Okay, it's not clear what the shamir is. Some people say it's like a worm. Others say it's not a worm. It's like a sherik, which means like a small little reptile, which would be
definitely not a unicorn.
Right. It could be a snail.
Unicorns are cult creatures.
Unicorns don't actually live. But anyway, so you have like a, you have like a, something, some, could be like a snail with very sharp teeth. But it's the type of thing that had a laser. The Gemara talks about how did they, I don't know if you guys learned this, but there's a parasha that we're doing, parasha Pakuda. You have the Choshen HaMishpat, right?
Yeah.
So it says that the names had to be Ptuchei Chotam in the Choshen HaMishpat. So what does that mean? It has to be engraved. You can't just write the name on it, a little magic marker, write on my diamond. No, it had to be engraved. At the same time, it says that it had to be shalem. They were maleok. So if they were shalem, how could you, if I sit there with a chisel, all the little dust is going to go away. It's not going to be. So what did they do? They had a shamir, so the Gemara says. The shamir that they would, let's say, write on it, and he would then go over on the ink, and everywhere it went, it split it. Gemara says, like, you know, like a fig with crack open in the sun. You're not missing any part of the fig. Just cracks open. So too, wherever the shamir went, it would carve out, you know, the letter, and it would crack open, and nothing would be missing. It would be chiseled away without anything
it's
gonna
stick
going.
When Mashiach comes, and then we realize it's extinct, we have nothing to do.
Yeah, so it is extinct.
So
there's a whole question amongst the Mepharshim. Was it an animal that was around just because it was needed then, now it's not all around? Or is the animal still around, just doesn't have that ability anymore? I saw one modern scholar say was radioactive isotopes. I don't even know what that means, how that works, but, you know, I did see someone say such a thing. Or is maybe a very sharp stone that somehow cut something else. But the only problem is if you have a very sharp stone that's cutting something else, you would assume that it's leaving dust. I don't know how exactly it works. But like I said, whether or not the shamir was used to cut the stones, as some say in the Gemara, it was, everyone says, used for the names on the Abnei Eifod, the Abnei Achoshan. The whole is a crazy Gemara that talks about Shlomo had to send Bineo Ben Yehoyada to capture the shamir. How do you capture a thing that can laser its way out of anything? You know, the Gemara has those weird stuff. How do you capture something that, you know, can break out of everything? Right? Okay.
Was it very small?
I guess so. So it sounds like. Right. Well, they didn't want to kill it. Shlomo wanted to use it. Shlomo wanted to use it. So how do you capture it to use it? Right? You want to kill it, that's one thing.
You leave Reese's pieces.
And it follows the line. Right. And it continues along the way. Oh, little Hansel and Gretel stuff, maybe. Okay.
Not a unicorn.
God starts off talking about Habayit Hazeh. Right, Pasuk Yud Aleph Yebet, Vayhi Dvar Hashem El Shlomo Lemor, Habayit Hazeh Sheta Boneh, Im Telech Bechukatai Ve'et Mishpatai Taseh. Very interesting. On the one hand, we're talking about the house, but he says, the house will stand as long as you keep my mitzvah. Not as long as you have a good construction, you know, company, that your architect could have did a good job, but as long as you keep mitzvah. In other words, what's God saying? The house isn't really for me. I don't need it. It's to make a relationship between us. Right? I even heard explained many times, the Kodesh Kadashim, right? The Beit HaMikdash. What's in the Beit HaMikdash? You've got a table. You've got a light. You've got the Aron is sort of like the bedroom. Right? You've got the Kruvim, which are, according to Chazal, a man and a woman. Marty even talks about that the poles stuck out of the parochet, like breasts sticking out when a woman wears a dress. So that's sort of like the bedroom. And then outside, you've got like the table to eat, and you've got light. And basically, what are you saying? I built you a little guest house. Whenever you want to come to the Baruch Hu, the lights will be lit, the food will be on the table. I'm building you a home for you to come whenever. Right? And this is what we're doing. And therefore, Hashem is saying, it's not the schus of Shlomo, but it's the schus of the mitzvah. The schus of the mitzvah is what will maintain the Beit HaMikdash. What do we say? What?
Until we stop.
Until we stop, right. And that's why Rashi explains, the Pasuk says, you know, look at the end of this Pasuk here. And Pasuk Yud Gimel, Shechanti B'toch Bnei Yisrael. Not B'toch V'yi. You know, like B'toch Ham in the Chumash, here B'toch Bnei Yisrael, B'loz Levet Ami Yisrael. I will be, just like B'toch Ham in Chumash, I'll be B'toch Bnei Yisrael. Okay? Judaism is not confined to the synagogue, right, or temple life. It's 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And it's up to us. I will live with you. I will live with you. Right. The Mishkan was portable. Now we're building something more permanent, and that's what we're doing over here. Now, okay. One more thing. In Sefer Malachim, there's no mention of the Mizbeach and Nechoshet. Mizbeach and Nechoshet. We wrote all the Karbanot, right? Called something called Mizbeach Olah. And that was out in the courtyard. It's not mentioned. But it is mentioned in the Divrei Hayamim. So this nice idea from Menashe Wiener. He says, this goes back to Machlokas, basically Ramban and Rambam. According to the Ramban, the main part of the Beit HaMikdash is the Aron. In fact, he counts it as its separate mitzvah. Building Beit HaMikdash, building the Aron. Why? Because the purpose is Makom Gilui Shechina. What is Makom Gilui Shechina? A place where Kadosh Baruch Hu can come and reveal himself to us. It's a mini Maim at Har Sinai. We were up on our Kadosh Baruch Hu was up on Har Sinai, and everyone felt his presence. And what did God do? I'm going to allow you to take that experience with you, a portable Har Sinai. And wherever you go, you'll have it. That's why, what's the whole essence? What does the Aaron have? Poles. Now let him remove the poles. What's the idea? Wherever you go, I'm with you. I'm with you, wherever you go. So this is, for the Ramban, the main part of the Beit HaMikdash. The Rambam writes, the main thing is the Mizbech. Right? I bring Karbanot. I do the Avodah. And if so, you could say that the difference between the Ramban and the Rambam is, this is the place where man and God meet. The only question is, for the Ramban, it's, you know, God coming to meet man. And for the Rambam, it's man coming to serve God. And if so, on the one you say it's a machlokas, or Ravina said, maybe they're talking about two different things. Ramban's talking about the Mishkan, and the Rambam's talking about the Beit HaMikdash. Okay? For the Ramban, as we said, it was taking Maamar Har Sinai with us. Right? Making it portable. The Rambam's writing, however, right, is dealing with Maseches Midos, Bayit Sheni, deals with Mizbeach. Why is he dealing with the Mizbeach and not the Aaron? Because in Bayit Sheni time, there was no Aaron. The Aaron's already missing. So the Rambam's not going to talk when he's basing everything from Maseches Midos on the importance of the Aaron, because it wasn't around at that time. And now, using this, said Rav Menashe Aviner, go back to Malachim versus Divrei Hayamim. Who's the author, according to Chazal, of Sefer Malachim? Yirmiyahu. Okay? Yirmiyahu. Who's the author of Divrei Hayamim? Ezra. Now, Yirmiyahu is stressing, he's giving mussar to the people, that we should not do anything that will ruin our relationship with God. The Beit, the Mikdash, the Mokum, Gilo, Shechina. Don't mess up and stop doing mitzvahs. If you do that, we'll no longer have a relationship with God. That is being jeopardized, and therefore, we're going to lose the Aaron. And therefore, what's talked about in Malachim? The Aaron. Ezra, on the other hand, he's writing about Bayis Rishon. It is Divrei Hayamim, which is talking about Bayis Rishon, but he's already starting to build what? Bayit Sheni. He's building Bayit Sheni. He already knows they don't have an Aaron. And therefore, what is the stress for Ezra in Divrei Hayamim, for the people that are building Bayit Sheni and learning about Bayis Rishon? We have what they had then. What was that? The Mizbeach. Mizbeach was so important then, and Baruch Hashem, we have it again. So the stress for Ezra, right? He's talking about the past with an eye to the future. The eye to the future is we still have the main component of the Beit HaMikdash, which was the Mizbeach. And therefore, we can still serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu the way they did back then. This was, I think, it was a very nice idea. His idea explaining the difference between Malachim and Divrei Hayamim. Okay.